On the podcast, we return with a special guest that's going to co-host with me. We don't have Quick Carl today because he's on vacation, but we're going to be talking something a little different. We're going to talk about pets. Socratic Neighbors Podcast, where we think things through. My name is Lotus, and I don't have Quick Carl with me. I've got a special co-host all the way from Texas as well, and she wants to be addressed as Ella, but really she's my sister. And welcome, Ella.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us, for the 20 or 30 listeners that Carl and I have, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have we known each other, and you know, what you do for a living?
Well, I've known you for about 24 years.
Okay.
being your younger sister. I am a graduate from A&M. Whoop. I graduated studies with animal science.
Okay.
So bachelor of science, animal science. I grew up with tons and tons of animals of all types, and I love horses. I used to barrel race, and that is my huge, huge passion of mine. I am currently working in the medical field at a hospital, and I have a ambition of becoming a physical therapist. And what I'd like to do is work with people with horses, using horses as a form of therapy.
Using horses as a form of therapy. Interesting. So what is our topic today?
So topic today is human or owner-pet relationships, animal-human relationships.
Owner and pet relationships. Interesting. I own two dogs, so I find pets to be a very good topic.
Very comical. Yes.
Pets are pretty, they're fun. They're a lot of responsibility. I think they help you when you own a pet, when it's your pet. They give you a lot of responsibility to segue into other things, you know.
Yeah.
So interesting. It'd be interesting. I've had a pretty decent busy week myself. I just finished 62 hours, so I'm tired.
Oh my gosh!
I've taken lots of caffeine to stay up for the podcast because it's a little bit later here in the far eastern state of Florida versus in Texas, yes, where it's a little bit.
Yes, I have major props to you for still being awake.
Yes. But anyway, so we'll make it through. We'll make it through. This will be a shorter podcast. I know you have to go to bed earlier soon or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Love the, yeah. Early rising for work.
Early to rise. Okay, so pets. Why? What makes a pet, and how the interaction with a human, there is a certain amount of, I don't say a certain amount, but there's a huge relationship between a pet, so it's just like a dog or a cat, with a human being. Even, I mean, you have horses, so, I mean, there's a huge relationship balance there. And do you think it's a give and take balance, or is it one-sided, or, you know, do you think that the pets are more receiving than they are giving, or do you think there's a pretty even course of how pets interact with human beings?
That's a great, great point. I think the first thing that should be mentioned is what you consider a pet. So in it has become a very common thing in today's society for, I think what makes a pet is how kind of sort of emotionally attached the purpose of that pet or the purpose of that animal. So you have, I mean, take dogs. Okay. So you have working dogs, that work with cattle, sheep. You have dogs that are in therapy. You have used dogs in security. They are not pets. They are there to do a job. They have been trained for that. You know, uh-huh. it makes them no less maybe friendly or anything than any other dog, but their purpose primarily is to work. I had a friend that her dad had a police dog, and he was not, I mean, he came home with her dad every day from work, but he was not a pet. He was not treated as a pet. But then you also have your normal pet dog that you love on, you know, you take on walks, you know, you love on, you feed it, you groom it, you know, and it is treated way, way differently. Its purpose is primarily, I guess, for your own benefit, pleasure, rather than a certain job, per se. Right. You know, I would say that in animal relationships, it also, I guess, kind of like people, it's how you make it, you know, how you treat it. You know, I firmly believe, like, animals, they are not people. People tend to raise animals to a sort of a people standard, and it has become pretty kind of a more and more common thing in today's society with dog therapies, you know, with, you know, like psychology, you know, and
pet right.
place, you know, and it's become, you know, and oh, that's my baby. That's not, you know, that's not my pet. That's my baby, you know, mm-hmm. and hey, I am right there with it. I do the same thing with my own animals. And, you know, it is just one of those things that you just tend to do, you become attached to it. And so really it's, you know, to say that an animal or a pet, you know, your dog, your cat, your bird, whatever, it is, you know, a one-sided thing. It's not, because you're taking care of that, you know, and in response, that animal, you know, loves you, you know, and is there, you know, to cuddle up with you or go on walks with you or however, you know, and, there's just something really special about that bond between, you know, animals and people. But I mean, I wouldn't say it's a one-sided relationship at all, but, you know, it's, I think there definitely needs to be a boundary of, no, you are the owner. That is your animal. You know, it should not, I think animals, particularly horses, tend to kind of play games to see who's boss, in a sense, to see who's sort of in control. How much can I get away with? You know, and you need to keep that boundary of, hey, no, you know, I'll love on you and I'll pet you and everything, but, you know, I'm still the owner. I'm still sort of, you know, I'm still in control and you need to listen to me, you know?
Right. Yeah, you bring up a good point about people often they tend to replace completely replace human interaction with animal interaction, which is can be a very destructive thing.
Yes.
I think that if you're I think if you're very shy, I guess is the word that we're going to go with. I think if you're shy and an animal helps you break into an animal helps you break out of that, I think that's more of a therapeutic thing. And I definitely agree that.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely agree that animals serve a therapeutic purpose in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
I also think that there doesn't, not just because an animal is also a work served as a work purpose, that doesn't necessarily negate the potential emotional attachment that the owner or caretaker or ward might have for that dog.
Because with
police dogs, canine units particularly. Yeah. I mean, the canine masters are very responsible for their dog, and they do develop almost an emotional attachment to their dogs, even though their dogs are work dogs. They still develop an emotional attachment because they work side by side with these dogs.
Well, and you can't help but develop a like friendship relationship with them. I mean, after a while, I mean, I work with animals and all the time, and I don't really see them so much as an animal as like their personality, you know, who they are, you know? Right. And so not to confuse them with people by any means, but it becomes a very special thing. I definitely agree with you. Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, there's dog movies about them all the time, you know, like Megan Levy and, you know, I mean, just, and it's phenomenal. You know, they have a purpose and a job to do, but absolutely there is still that emotional attachment and something that the dog needs as well. You know, they're pack animals, you know, animals have a, depending on the animal, they have a mentality to stick to something, you know, like that is, you are their friend and, you know, or their family.
Right. But. Right. Well, I mean, it, a big dependency thing is, with Jupiter, she burned her paws. She burned her paws on the tennis court, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
a few months ago. Well, that would be almost a year ago. And, you know, she became completely dependent upon me to make sure she went outside, make sure her paws got taken care of. She was defenseless, you know, and I don't, you know, it would have been a different story if she was out in the wild and something similar had happened, you know, but she was also out on the tennis court for the sake of playing with me as well, because she kept going, even though her paws hurt, because she wanted to play. She knew what I was doing. She wanted to play. And then she kept going. And so that caused more hurt than it did benefit to her. And so the animals will often endure, I think a lot of animals will often endure a fair amount of pain to satisfy their owners or their masters to their whims. And I think that
loyalty.
Right. It's a very big, particularly if you create a good relationship with a pet, particularly a dog and a horse for sure.
Yeah.
You can easily create a relationship where the personalities really start to show. And start to understand how their personalities work and how they relate to you and how they communicate to you, because there's other communication than just whinnying at you or barking at you. There's curling up with you, figuring it, you know, Mrs. Lotus does. Her Mrs. Lotus dog does. She flips her bowl in protest when she's hungry. She doesn't come at you. You know, there's little things like that that
come
break
out.
Break the nonverbal barrier. And I definitely agree that it's very difficult for a human to. It's very difficult for a lot of humans today when the human interaction can be considered so negative, because. Yeah. And it's not to blame the internet, it's not to blame social media or anything like that, but there are a lot of people that become more dependent on pets because pets don't turn around and fight with you.
They have that not judgmental attitude about them.
Right.
Well, and I mean, like you said, you know, I think like anything too much can be a good thing. You know, you take an animal, that should not be your only interaction, but they can be used in order to help you through, you know, anxiety, pain, you know, just whatever, you know, and just being there for you, but that should not ever replace a person. But it is, and it is something just quite, you know, there's something just, I think, incredible, just the relationship you can get. And between that, it's not just with one species, you know, you have different types and, now, there is one thing that I know a lot of people that tends to be very controversial that I did want to bring up is that animals do not have the emotional capabilities of people, which I think is whenever we put that on animals, it tends to humanize them. And so then that's when we really start treating them more like people and putting them on a level that is the same as people. And I think that is the point where perhaps it's too far. You know, animals have a purpose, you know.
Are you referring to emotions as in terms of feeling, like I feel sad, feel happy, feel depressed, you
know,
or are you talking more in terms of this feels weird, this isn't right, this, you know, like kind of I guess more of an intuition type thing. I mean, it's hard to describe. I know exactly what you're talking about, but it's hard to describe.
I wouldn't say, I mean, they have emotional capabilities and that, yes, they feel sad. They feel those, you know, those major emotions. I think what what I'm trying to say is the depthness.
Right.
You know, they don't, we tend to analyze, you know, and especially being a girl, I tend to analyze my feelings and like, okay, why am I feeling this? I'm feeling this way because of this. Oh, this started that, you know, and that's why I'm feeling this way. I think animals do not I don't believe that they were given that capability necessarily, you know, but then again, I don't speak animal, so,
right.
You know,
well,
there's no way of telling,
right?
Per se.
But there's also no manipulation on the part of an animal. An animal's pretty direct on what they want, or
yes,
you know, there is a certain amount of puzzling that goes involved. I agree that animals, but the depth of manipulation to which an animal, because you can't present an animal with a way. Okay, well, figure out how to get this person to do this thing, but it serves no benefit to the animal. Whereas an animal will try to manipulate you to giving it to you for its benefit. So
right.
Like dogs wanting a treat or something like that.
Yes.
And I agree with you that there's also no, and I figured out the word, there's also no existentialism with a pet or an animal. Animals don't sit there and contemplate their own existence, and they also don't have the same reasoning skills.
There's just that definite, you know, I think that there's that line where it's, you know, it's like people are uniquely made, you know, animals, yes, are uniquely made, but we were created uniquely made and to have those extraordinary capabilities. You know, I believe animals do not necessarily possess that, but that by no means takes away their, you know, purpose or just how awesome and wonderful they are. But, you know, then again, it brings back my points, like, you know, like animals have such a special purpose in our lives, but they should not ever be sort of traded in instead of people, you know, like both are needed.
Well, it always comes back to the question that people often ask is, you know, who would you save, a dog or a complete stranger? And the answer is always complete stranger, you know, because a human's life is more valuable than your pet's life.
Yeah. As hard as, you know, that is, because you know your pet, you don't know the stranger, but it comes down to this is a human and this is a pet, you know, and those situations are so heartbreaking, you know, but I think it's important to remember just that, you know, it's like, look at what this is, you know.
Well, and it also ticks me off about animal rights advocates and things like that. Oh, well, animals can't fight for themselves. I said, my comeback is always, well, if animals could think and reason the same way a human can, then they wouldn't need you to fight for them. My other pushback is that you care more about an animal than you do about me. And you find an animal's life for more value, an animal that's not going to save you, such as a tiger. A tiger is not going to save you. You know what I mean? A dog might. A dog that's emotionally attached to you might.
Right,
but
yeah.
A tiger or these other animals that are not domestic, I should say undomesticated animals are not going to have the same emotional attachment to you as someone else, as a same emotional impact that would be willing to stand up and fight for you the same way you are for it. And valuing a tiger's life over my life is kind of a shame. I just think that it speaks more to their character than it does to mine, that I value a human being over I value a tiger or another animal.
Yeah.
And I don't like the pushback of, oh, well, what if it was Hitler? It's like, okay, well, if it's Hitler, you save the dog or the leaf next to Hitler. You don't save Hitler.
There are extreme situations.
And it's like you've changed the you've also changed the variables. The idea is you don't know this person, so you're saving them because it's the value of the human life,
Yeah, they're intrinsic value.
Not because it's a particular person. But it's interesting. I think society at large pushes back on the negative interactions that humans have with each other. So there's a huge negative interaction base, and I think we've already kind of touched on this, but animals just don't have that negative interaction with humans if they've been raised right, for one. The other purpose that I think that animals serve is, you look at with what Chris Pratt did, raising a lamb to a sheep and then, you know, slaughtering it and using it for food. You know, we do that all the time. Human beings do that all the time. And that animal has served its purpose. There's a certain amount. There is, I will agree to a lot of people, to that there is a certain amount of emotional attachment that can occur with that. But at the same time, the animal still serves its purpose and fulfilled its life for a specific reason. You know, well, I just don't understand. I also didn't understand the pushback on Pratt for that. That was kind of silly. It's food. Let's go have a rack of lamb. You know, it's okay.
And a lot of it, well, so fun thing, well, I will say though about the animal, about the animal activists is that, I mean, they're there for a purpose, and I think to give voice to certain, you know, cases. But I definitely agree that, like, an animal's life, like we were saying, should not be above a human's life. You know, I think there are, you know, animal activists have a purpose to, you know, I believe that, you know, people should protect animals, you know, but it shouldn't come between an animal and a person's life. You know, you should not be placing that standard on animals, you know, and, you know, and then referring to, like, Pratt's thing, you know, being in animal science, it is really, we learned a lot about livestock science. And so a lot of it was learning about livestock and the purpose. And we took a meat science class, and that was so eye-opening. And it was awesome because I got to see, I mean, it was from live animal to packaged and ready, you know. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is where your burgers are coming from, where your fried chicken that you're getting is coming from, you know. Right. Those are animals, you know, and it's hard to see a living thing and then, you know, and then, like, I mean, you're not seeing the whole process of what happens. And by no means is it pretty, you know. I mean, I went through several slaughter labs, and having never even gone hunting, it was just completely like, wow, okay, you know, like, right. This is rough. But animals have a purpose. Livestock have a purpose of food.
For sure.
Or milk, or, you know, I mean, that's their job, you know. And so what Chris Pratt did of, you know, raising a lamb and have, you know, and then later slaughtering it, you know, that's just part of the food process. And many people, you know, it's like, Christian, how can you do that? You know, it's an animal, you know. Well, yes, but it's also food, you know. It's not a pet, you know. Right. He could have, there goes the line. He could have very well made that lamb a pet and chosen not to eat it. You know, he could have just kept it the way it was, but he chose to, no, I'm going to raise it. And he also, I think, kind of taught his family, I'm sure his kids and stuff were sort of a part of it, in that they saw this process and it taught them where it's like, okay, this is part of life. This is part of our society. That's how we're getting our meat. You know, we don't raise muscle, you know, we don't raise just meat, you know, we raise the animal for that. And it's also every part of, like, almost every part of that animal is used. It's not going to waste, you know. It's just part of the whole process. I mean, I completely agree. And so, I mean, but I think with anything anybody does, particularly famous people, you're going to get flack for what you do.
Well,
you know, someone's going to disagree.
That's part of being in the public eye, I suppose.
Yeah.
Other thing is, watching a, have you ever seen, I forget what it's called, it's about a fast food restaurant that finds unsavory things in their fast food, in their burger meat.
Ooh.
And and so there's a big lawsuit or whatever. It's a fictional movie, but there's a big lawsuit or whatever. And at the end, they show the beef factory of how they make the burgers.
Yeah.
And it was just so funny because there was this woman in my class that got really grossed out, and she became a vegetarian and a vegan shortly after that. And I mean, was like, no fault to you.
Not
but,
pretty.
I immediately went out and wanted to buy a steak.
I mean, you know.
And I wanted to eat her in front of her, honestly, because I just.
Oh my gosh, Lotus. I mean.
But it's so funny. Animals definitely serve a purpose in their lives, and most of them are not here for very long. Most humans outlive their pets.
That is a really sad reality. That's just the way. And I think that also, like, is a really hard and good thing about having a pet, is learning that reality of, you know, that death is a part of life. And it's sad. And it's horrible, you know, because you develop this relationship with this animal. You know, it could be a fish, or it could be a dog, or a horse, or, you know, whatever pet you have, a guinea pig, you know. And then, you know, I mean, you're seeing it throughout its life. But I think it goes to show just kind of the preciousness of life, and then also the importance of kind of seeing just, like, death is a part of life, you know.
Right.
And, you know, as sad as that is, but... you know, they kind of teach you that aspect of it.
Well, and I also think, like, it's very beneficial to children as well. If you're raising children,
yes.
I think it's beneficial to have a pet, because it does teach them a little bit about, or it does teach them a lot about letting go.
Yes.
Because, and that's a big problem that I have with our society, is that people don't know how or learn to let go of something, particularly if somebody has died, or if somebody's written off a show, or I mean, it's little things. And I have a problem with the superhero universe is very, very guilty of this. The almost every TV show is now guilty of this, is that they kill off characters, and then within a few episodes later, or the next movie, or two movies later,
they're brought back. Yeah.
And they've defied death somehow, you know? And I know, like, with, like, the Justice League, it makes sense, because Superman's this indestructible being. But there are some instances where it doesn't make sense. As much as we like to rant and rave about how people should value life over human life over animal life, at the same time, quite a few people have a very difficult time of letting go of things. And I think that it definitely does teach.
Kind of helps with that process.
Right. And I definitely think it teaches particularly for children, it does teach the process of you need to let go. You have to let go. You have to move on. And I don't.
Well, in your own way of letting go, learning that healthy way. I know I do not deal with death very well, and I get heartbroken over losing animals, you know, and because I developed that emotional attachment. But you're right, you know, it is learning to deal with it and process it, you know, and let it go. And so, I mean, you're right. It's a very interesting phenomenon. I haven't thought about it that way, of how society in general just has a hard time, I think, because, like, we like the idea of, like, living, like, continue living on, you know. People don't want to be forgotten, you know, and they don't, you know, and they don't want their animal to be forgotten, you know. It's like, I think that it's kind of really, there's so many aspects of it, but I definitely agree that animals, like, the passing of animals kind of does innately, sadly, but innately helps you deal with your own, you know, process.
Yeah, it's definitely a grief process. There's definitely a grief process that has to occur with a lot of how how people need to go through the stages of grief to get over something and get over how they interact with other people. And if they don't, go through those, that grief, then, you know, then it's very difficult for you to move on. I also say this because, you know, did you see, people have a very difficult time moving on because you saw how, if you've seen the human taxidermy now.
No.
Oh man, there's a kid, 18-year-old kid died not too long ago, and his parents had him essentially taxidermied so that he was sitting in his couch with a video game controller in his hand looking at a TV.
Oh gosh.
And I said, I immediately thought, how lame do parents not understand how to let go? And I know that parents should not bury their children, but at the same time, I don't think you should desecrate the dead by doing something like that.
For your own, I mean, I agree. There's no right way of dealing, you know, everyone deals with their pain and grief differently, but I mean, to have, and you know, such an extreme as that, it's heartbreaking because, you know, this guy, you know, his life should be celebrated. You know, it shouldn't be continually mourned, you know, like that, or not mourned, prolonged, I guess. I mean, that's.
I mean, I don't know how you would find
peace with something that it was, like that, you know?
Assume that it was set up for the wake that way. So odd. It's just such an odd way to present the body.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that. Like it, you know, and to each his own. I agree. To each his own. This is a free country. To each his own. I don't disagree with your right to do that, but I disagree with that you did it. You know, it's.
I mean, is that how he'd want to be remembered? Oh. Hey, Riley. Stop.
How soon?
Yes. Yes, I am. Speaking of dogs, Riley, that's enough. And there's something up. Hey, Riley. You know, and it's interesting also, people do kind of the same thing with their pets. I think that is something very different. I personally am not for that. I think it's kind of creepy
to taxidermy human being.
Which is very different from having, like, you know, having taxidermy on, like, prized, you know, hunted animals, like deer, you know, birds. Stuff like that. I think that is something very different than having your pet.
Right. A human being taxidermied is much different than having your prized
game, 18, wild game.
Yeah. 18 point buck that you shot. Short,
yeah.
You know, an 18 point buck that you had. Yeah. Cause it's more of a medal than it is an attachment. You know, you've the fact that you went out and shot an 18 point buck or a 20 point buck, you know, that you got, you did that. It's an accomplishment more so than trying to hold on to something that you've had before. And I think it's a little weird to taxidermy your pet. And I think it's a little weird taxidermy to a human being. It's just a little odd.
I agree, you know. But once again, I mean, you're right to do so. May not agree, but yeah.
So why don't you, since you said you did barrel racing, so why don't you go into, you know, the relationship you had with who is Apache? Why don't you go into more of that? Because your horse name is Apache. So go into that, like the preparation. You know, is there things that you think that you have that Apache would be able to know? You know, there's a syncopation, I guess, with the in sync with a horse, because a horse knows how to respond to certain commands that, you know, that somebody else might not know. And can you explore more of that? That works.
Absolutely. So, I guess I should kind of explain my horse background. I, as Lotus knows, I've grown up loving loving horses. I used to feed my neighbor's horses, and my parents had always said, hey, if you want a horse, like, that's a very expensive hobby. We're going to make sure this is something you actually want to do. This is not going to be a, I want a horse, and then next month, drop it, you know. So I used to feed my neighbor's horses. And when I was in fifth grade, I got kicked. It was a fluke accident, totally my fault. I came up behind a spooked horse, and I was kicked, thrown back into a tree, and I ended up in the hospital for 8 days with a bruised liver, nearly collapsed lung, and some broken ribs. And then I couldn't be around horses for 6 months because they didn't want me to break anything else. But it was horrible because I still wanted to be around horses, but then I faced this problem of fear. I became afraid, as anyone would. About a year later, my family got our first horse, Joker, and I was bucked off of him, which did not help with my fear problem, but I still wanted to be around horses. And that was something that my mom really worked with me and really brought about, especially at a younger age, just the importance of breaking your fear, you know, not letting fear destroy your life, you know, like control your life. And so horses really became much more than just a fun hobby. It became this very personal thing for me of breaking through my fear. And so I started taking lessons, started working through my fear, and I got faster, and I started barrel racing. I had a coach, and we were in a team. And then about a year and a half later, I got Apache, and I started training him to barrel race. And then I started competing on him. And he just became I don't know how to describe it. Like, he is just one of my favorite things in the whole wide world. You just become very emotionally attached. When you're riding, it is much more than just getting on a horse and riding. When you're riding, you are continually training. So you're having to pay attention, and it's much more than a physically, yes, I am kicking the horse. I am staying balanced. I am moving left and right. When you're riding, horses feel everything. They feel your emotions just with how your body moves. You know, if you move a certain way, they feel if you're scared. So a lot of times people tend to get, if they're scared, the horse gets scared, and you hear these horrible accidents of like horses running off and everything. Yes, the horse may not have been the greatest horse, but it also on your part, you know, you're afraid. So the horse in its mindset is thinking, oh, you're the boss, you're afraid. That means something else is there, and so I'm going to be afraid. So they're very much, they read very much into your emotions, and, you know, because what your emotions are tends to downplay into how you're moving, you know. And so, and that was a big thing in working through my fear was, okay, I cannot ride and control this horse well if I am afraid, you know. And yes, it is a dangerous sport, you know, falling off. I've gotten bucked off and fallen off so many times. It's too many times to count, you know, and off of Apache, you know, especially. And so that is just a part of life, you know. I feel like that's just in general, things are going to happen, you know. And if you're afraid, you know, that really taught me that about life, like things happen, you know. And so, you know, you're going to fall down sometimes, and that's just part of it, you know, but you get yourself up and you dust yourself off and you get back on, you know, that whole back, you know, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I mean, kind of.
Literally, for you, it literally means get back on the horse.
It literally means get back in the saddle. Yes. Yeah. You know, you don't let them get away with that. And so, you know, and it teaches you, it taught me a lot of patience and gentleness and, you know, and kindness. And then I was on a team, and so it was a lot of team camaraderie, and my coach was just the absolute best, you know. And you go and going to these championships and, you know, nerves and everything. And my horse was there through like all of it, you know. And so he's very, very important to me, and and I've had him for over 10 years now. And so I know him very well, you know, and he knows me, you know, and with horses, a lot of times it is, it's a matter of them. They don't realize their size. They're big, but they do not realize they're 2,000 pounds. They just think, oh, hey, I'm prey, you know? And so they think everything's trying to get him. And so whenever you are interacting with a horse, you are going in with the idea of I am boss, and they're going to know that. Some horses are very submissive. Others are not so much. Some are very blunt about it. Hey, I'm upset and I'm going to try and not do what you want. Others, like Apache, tend to be very passive aggressive. He used to try and rub me off through gates. It was his way of, hey, I don't feel like doing this right now. And so then I was like, oh, no, that's cute. But no, we're going to do this, you know. And so it's, you know, figuring out ways of like, no, that's not OK.
I remember one time you racing and you fell off. You got thrown off or fell off or something like that. And
yeah,
he stops, turns around and looks at you. He like twists his head a little bit. What you doing on the floor?
Why are you on the ground? Yeah, like that's not helpful. That's not. Yes.
We can't win like that, sweetie.
Yeah, that's exactly him too. You know, and they have their own personalities. You know, it's not merely getting on and doing whatever. It's you know, getting on. Okay, this is gonna be an adventure. Like it's just one of those things that you really do become in sync. You're reading him and how he's doing and how he's feeling, and he's reading you going, okay, well, what are we going to do now? You know? And so, I mean, even now I'll get up on him and it's like, hey, I want you to lope. I want you to canter, you know? And he's often like, no, I'm good. And then it's like, no, I really do. And then he's like, okay, you know? And so you'll go for a bit and then, you know, and then you, so, it, you know, a lot of it's like, hey, I'm going to do as you ask. And then in return, I'll, you know, horses respond to pressure. So then I'll put less pressure on him, you know, I'll slow him down or whatever. And he'll, okay, you know, that wasn't so bad, you know? And so, I mean, it's just, there's a whole relationship there that goes beyond just, you know, oh, pretty horse. You know, it's more of, you know, he becomes just a real friend, you know, a bond. And but they're so funny that way. Yeah, I mean, you go through times like that, and you know, and there's just so much to be learned from him,
for sure,
always,
for sure.
Yeah,
it also speaks to the type of, I mean, it's not nearly as intensive, but it also speaks to the kind of, it probably does speak to the intensive training that rodeo, that people in the rodeo, you know, that we see in the livestock show and rodeo in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how much training they have to go through to prepare for, you know, cattle roping, you know, oh, stuff, yeah, like that. I mean, you can't sit there and turn around and tell, yeah, the horse, hey, hold your ground. The horse has to know, hey, yeah, hold your ground type.
There's a whole, I mean, yeah, it comes down to, they're going to know their business. You're going to know what you're doing. And I think it's whenever you like, people know you're good whenever you make it look easy. You know, and often those pro people, they make it look easy. Make it look like you get on the horse and they'll do whatever, you know. And that's also where, you know, you got a good, well-trained horse, is the horse, like, is going to do it no matter what, whether you're on him or not, you right. know. But making it look that easy, you know, they got there, they do their business, you know. It's like, no, you know, and often those animals, they have a passion to do it too. They want to do that, you know. They want to go fast. They want to, you know, they want to be cutting, you know, cattle. They want to be roping. They want to be doing, you know, I mean, that it comes, you know, they want to be jumping, you know, and there's so many different disciplines and types of horses out there that, you know, I mean, it's, you know, they have their, you know, it's not merely people making them do it, but, you know, horses also do have a passion in wanting to do that. I know my instructor's daughter, you know, they've done racing all their lives, and they just have horses that are just Speedy Gonzales, but they have a passion for doing that. Patchy, less so. He's not as big on speed, but love him anyway. But others, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you see that with race horses. They're out there running their hearts out, you know. you know, I mean, yes, you can make them do that, but a lot of them, you know, when you look at it and they're just, no, I love the competition. I want to be out there racing, you know.
Well, and pets start to figure out the game. They like, yes. they start to figure out and oftentimes they start to like the game.
Yeah.
You see that, with dogs, because dogs, you know, you play tug of war with them, or you play fetch. With horses, I mean, particularly thoroughbreds, they start to figure out, oh hey, they, because they like running.
I mean, and been it's like, oh,
I can be rewarded for how fast I go. Yeah. And they start to figure out the game, and it's really interesting because it shows that there is a certain amount of intelligence, a fair amount of intelligence that a horse
that a horse
and other pets are able to figure out the game and figure out the puzzle. And it speaks to a lot of the naivete, not necessarily the naivete that humans have, but the naivete that humans also treat all animals as being dumb, because there is that opposite end of the spectrum that,
I mean,
people treat animals horribly, and then there's, and then also the expect that people are superficial about animals as well. You know, there is a huge gamut of how people interact with animals and pets.
I completely agree. And I think so that's something that people need to keep in mind. Yes, not everyone likes animals or pets or whatever, but that's okay. Everyone is entitled to whatever they want to like, but they should not be ignorant on the fact that animals have their own personalities. They have what they, you know, their likes, their dislikes, their own purposes and jobs and, you know, excitements, you know, some dogs love water. They love water. My dog growing up hated water. You could not get her near the pool. She would shake and back away, and that was it. You know, I mean, you have, you know, it's like, I think people should not, they should not like be ignorant of that. I think they need to realize, you know, there is, you know, animals have their own intelligence.
Yeah. Well, it was great to have you on the show. I was glad you could come on the show.
Thank you so much. Are there any last questions, comments?
I think we kind of tied it up in a nice bow. We went on both ends of the spectrum. We talked about the superficialness and the over glorified use of animals, and we also talked about how people do also treat animals as being kind of idiotic, you know, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there is a certain amount of moderation that has to be considered when you're talking about how a human and an animal should interact. And I'm glad that we didn't go into the more philosophical, because I don't think the more philosophical is necessary of are humans animals, and I don't think we need to talk about that. That's another podcast.
Be a point, you know, tonight. Like, that's not our point of topic tonight.
Right.
You know, I think there are several different ways that, of course, you can go on and on with it, you know, and but I agree. I think we talked about a good bit, and I feel so very honored
that you would invite me. I'm very happy you were able to come on the podcast, Quick Carl. I'm sure Quick Carl is going to listen to this and be like, I got a replacement. But I'll have you back on the podcast, probably with Quick Carl as well. We can talk about some more animal related stuff, or we can talk about something else, or something that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
I like doing the podcast with you, and hopefully you.
Oh, thank you. You'll
come back.
Been a pleasure. I love it.
Good. This has been Lotus and my guest host.
Hello.
And this is the Socratic Neighbors podcast, and we do our best to think things through. We use the Socratic method to analyze a topic and talk about things in a Socratic method type of way. And I know I'm repeating myself, but that's the way I like to say it. You can find us on the Twitters at Socratic Podcast. We don't post a whole lot because we prefer human interaction versus animal interaction or social media interaction. And we also don't typically have animals on the podcast except for the jingling of our pets.
Yes.
Collars, I should say. And you can email us at SocraticNeighbors@gmail.com, or you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Keep in mind that the last most recent seven episodes are on iTunes and Google Play, and all of the episodes are on YouTube due to the lack of financial backing that we have. We don't have any advertisers, so gotta stay free.
Hey, you've covered quite a bit of social media.
So I think next episode I plan to have a gaming buddy of mine that I played, you know, games with, video games quite a bit, and we're gonna probably go into the depth of the history of video games and you know, are they a benefit or not a benefit to society. I think that we'll probably come down on agreement over whether there's a benefit or not a benefit to society. It'll be interesting. So what do you got planned this week?
Let's see, I gotta work and I'm hanging out with my animals.
Cool. Well, Mrs. Lotus just started working. She had her first day today, so that was good.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she was pretty happy about the job actually, so we'll see where it goes. But she's pretty happy. She starts working nights tomorrow night, so I'm kind of.
She's a night owl.
She'll be fine. I think she'll be fine.
That'd be great.
But then I got a special project. The CEO called me on. Whoa. The CEO called me on Wednesday, and he's got a special project for me this week. So. I was told to clear my schedule, so work is kind of picking up, so I'm having to do less and less. That's why it took me so long to put out an episode, just because I've been doing so much work.
You've been making the big bucks there.
Right. I'm trying to make that commission.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Exciting.
So it's going to be a good week, I think, and I definitely look forward to having you back.
Oh, thank you. So, I would love to be back.
Yes. Well, you're welcome back anytime. So,
all right,
listeners, you guys have a great week, and we will see you next time.